Amanda Iannucci's Charm Offensive, presented by Amanda Iannucci.
Hello, welcome back to Charm Offensive, which this week comes from the beautiful city of Edinburgh. For centuries, Edinburgh has been known as the Glasgow of the East.
Oh dear.
That's a good start. No, you'll like this fact, though. It's the source of the world's largest natural deposit of cobble. But the city is probably best known as the background location for the film which made Maggie Smith famous, Top Gun. To celebrate the start of a brand new series of Charm Offensive, the citizens of Edinburgh have put on an arts festival. And to give you some idea of the range and diversity of the events in the Edinburgh Festival, this week's panel is full of English comedians. Please welcome Mark Watson, Justin Edwards and Stuart Lee. Now, we're going to start the show by coming clean. As I said, we're coming from Edinburgh this week because we had to. We said we're coming to. Normally, if a show says it's coming from the Edinburgh Festival, we actually just record it in London, but just playing a bit of stock footage of the Edinburgh Festival, normally it's a clip of a child throwing some wet bread at a clown. But as you know, the public have been losing trust in the BBC ever since the corporation was revealed to be mostly liars. Sorts of scandals have emerged in the past few weeks. For example, that the BBC's weather reports bear no relation to actual meteorological events, and that Michael Burke's legs go up to his neck. But the BBC gets round this by filming him from a high angle. So before we go on, I'd just like to ask the panel if there are any other media distortions that they've witnessed.
Well, I don't trust anything in television at all. And it started at an early age. When I was 15, I used to go rock climbing. And I was in the Peak District once, and on the face next to me, there was a bunch of underprivileged kids that had been taken out to learn how to climb. And they were being filmed for a Channel 4 documentary. And none of them got more than 6 feet up the face. But when I got home and watched the documentary, it was shot from such a low angle by Channel 4 that it looked like they'd scaled this impossible mountain. And ever since then, since that point, I've never trusted underprivileged children. Because on some level, they must have colluded with Channel 4.
I mean, at the Olympics, where they're setting records for the high jump, it's they're not raising the bar, they're just lowering the camera.
Lowering the camera, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And again, with the long jump, they don't jump very far, they just film it from a long way away.
How do they do the triple jump?
They film it three times. And the pole vault is a logistical nightmare.
Yeah. Justin, have you ever been surprised?
I was surprised when I learned that the archers... originally, it was just made... Well, the BBC just used to leave a tape recorder running on a farm. Until once in the late 70s, it was swallowed by a cow. And so for a week, the entire Archers were just the sound of a tape going through four stomachs. And it was the highest rated episodes ever.
It was actually a stomach consultant credited at the end.
Yeah, just...
You know, all the footage in David Attenborough programmes that's supposed to be unusual insects and fish... That's just rubber-faced funny man Phil Cool filmed through a lava lamp.
Well, I know for a fact that Jonathan Ross is mostly hydraulics. So where does this leave us then in trusting the news? For example, is the BBC's usual method of providing their journalists with extreme right-wing scripts and trusting their innate left-wing bias to balance it out? Is that no longer going to work? Or?
I heard that Hugh Edwards makes up all the news. He's just an incredible creative talent.
I actually saw... there's a Starbucks on Shepherd's Bush Green by where the BBC is, and I was in there once, and I saw Hugh Edwards, and he got a coffee, and on the way out, he thought no one was looking, but I saw him. He got loads and loads of the sachets of sugar, and he put them in his pocket, and it was way more than he could have needed for any coffee. So I think...
How much do you think Edwards would need?
Five, maximum five.
What, there was, he took more than five?
He took about 30.
Oh, Edwards.
In his pocket. And he looked around. So if he'd been getting them for his own... as we all know, if you're taking the amount of sugar that you need, you do it with confidence. You're not furtive about it. There's obviously an element of... It was theft, basically. You know,
and this man's presenting the news.
He's a sugar thief.
It's true.
And that's not a euphemism for something. I don't want this to go any worse than it has already.
Yeah. No, that's true, because I first time I heard about that crime was when it was reenacted on Crime Watch.
Well, Crime Watch is a rigged programme as well. They've solved all the crimes,
yes,
but they get people to phone in because it's a premium rate phone line.
I think Crime Watch should be live.
Should be live.
It should be live, yeah.
If Crime Watch was live, would they get Bill Oddie to sort of camp out and do little commentaries on crimes as they're being...
You can literally watch so many things, yeah. Why not criminals?
You could leave a little camera outside suspected criminals' houses and then just see if they come out very quietly during the night.
I know for a fact that Thought for the Day is done mostly for a laugh.
I was in London Zoo once in the cafeteria, and I saw David Attenborough going there. And he got some chips, right? And he obviously wanted. He took about 20 ketchup sachets.
Not Attenborough as well.
He did. Now, he may have needed tops 5 for the chips.
He can afford ketchup of anyone.
He can afford ketchup of
anyone.
Maybe
it was research for the Red Planet. Which is his...
When he spotted every possible animal, he'll move on to condiment series.
I was going to say that The World at 1 is actually recorded at 12.
Because it's not really recorded in the world.
No, it's not even that.
Why is it recorded at 12? What possible benefit?
So Martha Kearney can get to the canteen before everyone else. And steal the little vinegar sachets.
Okay, well, I'm going to end this section with the latest scandal to hit the BBC. It took place on Radio 4's Law in Action, where the programme makers have now admitted that in one programme, with just a minute to go before they went live on air, they couldn't find the guest legal expert. So they substituted him at the last minute with the producer's daughter. Here's a clip. Let's see if he got away with it.
Here's a grisly scenario in which morality and the law sit uneasily alongside each other. Person A hands a syringe full of heroin to person B. B takes the syringe and, quite voluntarily, injects the drug. As a result, he dies. Is A guilty of causing B's death under the law of manslaughter? Ask Barrister John Cooper what lay at the heart of the case.
Causation is the critical legal If a person offers a secondary person a noxious substance and there is a direct link, then causation is, on the face of it, established.
Just explain to me what the law of causation says.
Don't know. My daddy told me to say the other thing. I learned it.
And what about the fact that person B injects it on his own without any assistance from person A?
I don't know who person A is.
You don't know person A. It's hypothetical.
Well, hello, daddy.
We talked about this in the car, remember?
Just explain the distinction between passing a tablet to someone on the one hand and passing a syringe full of heroin on the other.
When do I get to meet Connie Huck?
Thank you very much. If you've just joined us, we're coming from the Pleasance Theatre in Edinburgh during the festival. And at the very site where 20 years ago I first came to the festival as a performer, it was the exciting dawn of alternative comedy, where audiences at long last were hungry for political edgy satire, and where unfortunately I was performing in the Oxford Review. So on a nightly basis was subject to angry crowds walking out of my show shouting, "We're off to see a young Jeremy Hardy." Now, I don't want to dwell on this because I have moved on, but I remember one particular night when a reviewer from The Scotsman left halfway through the show and wrote next day that I was disappointing. And I resolved then and there not to be bitter about it, but to grow from that experience. In the end, it made me raise my game so I could try harder and one day get so good that I could have my own national radio show. And in it, while literally tens of millions of people were listening, say out loud that I've got in front of me a copy of today's Scotsman. And I'm flicking through it. And do you know what, Duncan McKendry? Because that's your name. Do you know what? I'm reading the Scotsman and I'm finding it disappointing.
I like getting bad reviews. I've got a play on at the Traverse at the moment about Johnson and Boswell, and they got 3 stars, all right, in the Times, but the last line was, "The denouement involving a haggis is beneath the talent of all involved." I'd go to that.
Yeah. Now let's it's time to talk about Mr. David Cameron, who this week announced he was going to make our lives better by cutting what he calculated was £15 billion worth of red tape. So first of all, question to the panel, what is red tape and does it bother you?
Ironically, the company that makes red tape within Britain is a surprisingly bureaucracy-free. it's made in a commune, and they kind of have a very open,
Californian kind of like
campus. Yeah, very relaxed kind of,
approachable. Open neck shirts, everyone's on first name.
But the Tories announced their plans. Tories announced their plans on a thing that they called the red tape blueprint.
Yes. It was almost dazzling, it was so colourful.
And talking about red tape and sort of health and safety standards, we have had, of course, the plague of dangerous toys being withdrawn. Mm. See, that would have been stopped if China had had more red tape.
But if China and, because they do those big displays, don't they, with the kind of children whirling ribbons around.
Yes.
They'd just be waving sticks without their red tape. So how's that going to glorify, Kim Jong-il? I mean, he's not Chinese, but I'm... Stuart's got a big pile of newspapers next to him. I've got a box of biscuits, so it's no wonder I'm a bit out of touch.
Is there anything else that you'd like recalled? Any kind of dangerous or just things?
Board game Risk. Yes. It encourages people to try and take over the world by rolling dice.
There's a Girls Aloud doll set that's been recalled because of the danger that a child could collect all five dolls and then realise that life is pointless.
There's a faulty batch of My Little Ponies that had to be taken because some of them actually were little ponies.
Bloomsbury have had to recall 2 million copies of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows because of a printing error which made Hermione Granger spend half the book dressed as a slutty version of Harry's dead mother.
A big printing error.
How did that happen? Now, as I say, we're coming from the Edinburgh Festival, which is a time when the city is swamped by tourists and performers from all around the world. But what do the real citizens of Edinburgh actually make of their festival? Well, earlier today, I went out to ask some locals for their views. But I couldn't find any, so we're not running that item. Instead, let's talk about tombstoning. Tombstoning is a strange craze whereby people, mostly youngsters, film each other jumping off dangerous cliffs into the sea and hurt themselves to the amusement of onlooking reporters. Why this strange craze of wanting to hurt yourself badly?
It's political correctness gone mad. You can't even throw yourself off a sheer cliff to certain death in the sea now without some red tape measure trying to prevent you.
It sounds a bit like bungee jumping, but without the redeeming feature of not dying.
Yeah. It's bungee jumping without the bungee.
Yeah. They always say with bungee jumping, the worst bit is the waiting and the hurtling downwards at an incredible rate.
But the danger's in the name, isn't it? You're going to come out and tombstone. Someone said, can Justin come out and play autopsy? Well, my mother would go, I don't think so.
We're going to go train punching.
When we were kids, cockfighting, meant... Or dawn Frenching, which is a new craze, where you move to Cornwall and wait patiently to die.
So then is this a new craze then, or have we always had this predilection for putting ourselves in danger and doing, You've Been Framed was popular.
Yeah, You've Been Framed, as soon as there was a cash incentive to hurt yourself or film your children hurting themselves. The thing about, it's all about editing. You were talking about editing earlier on with regard to the BBC. I mean, You've Been Framed, that's funny. When you see a child fall over or his bike crash into a wall or something drop on them, that's funny because the edit stops at the point where they start crying and have to go to hospital. So it's a thin line between slapstick and tragedy, right? Tombstoning, the problem is, if we just saw the bloke fall off the cliff and splash in the water, we might go, But we get newspapers spoiling it by reporting their death.
It's true. When they did that bank holiday special of You've Been Framed where you saw them all die.
Yes.
Not Dennis Norden could have made that funny.
They removed all the amusing sound effects where it goes, boing, boing, boing.
What is the most dangerous thing you've ever done, then?
Oh, I don't know. No, I've had a fairly tame life. Mm-hmm. I once pretended to be Paul Simon for a bit. That,
The singer Paul Simon.
Yes, legally that was quite dangerous.
Yeah, top that, Stuart.
Well, I wasn't expecting to be asked this question, and I hadn't given him
that's
much
thought.
That's
just to show it's spontaneous.
I know, yeah.
If only we have to do that now.
I know, yeah. I think the most dangerous thing I've ever done, it's just not funny, it's true, though, is I was 4 years old, and I put a hair grip into the plug socket in a Canadian hairdresser's.
A Canadian hairdresser's?
Yeah, it was in a hairdresser's in Canada.
I thought when you said a Canadian hairdresser, you meant a sort of themed hairdresser, like you have Canadian restaurant.
Yeah.
We're all Canadian tonight. What would you like?
Bacon and wood.
We are literally coming from the Edinburgh Festival this week. There is an abundance of famous faces up here this year doing shows. So here for a roundup of the hottest events is Vaughan Savage with his hot list on what to see in Edinburgh.
Spotted. Angela Kelly, East Kilbride's £35 million lottery winner, buying a ticket to see Ricky Gervais, because she can afford it. Wow, a fire-eating Polly Toynbee. Oh, brilliant, it's totally consumed her. Latest addition to the Fringe lineup, Wayne Rooney, in My Left Foot. Rumour has it that the E. coli outbreak in Renfrewshire was caused by Patrick Kilty weeing on the ham. I spy a shadowy figure in an anorak, dodging the cops and stenciling his famous lesbian Queen Victorias all over town. Yes, it's Rolf Harris. Shh, it's Amy Winehouse in a pub, telling everyone her name's French for I like the pub. And who's that juggling down Prince's Street? It's Simon Heffer. He's forgotten his bra again.
He's strangely sort of experimental, Vaughan Savage, when he's left alone on tape in London. But one question that has come up is there are several festivals going on in Edinburgh, and in fact, someone who runs one of the venues has complained that there are too many events going on. And are there, in fact, too many, not just festivals, but too many arts? Do we have too much art these days? If we could lose an art, which one would you want to lose?
Balloon modelling, I think. Yeah, it's just a waste of valuable balloons. We need all the balloons we can get as a society. And that horrible noise, squeak, look, it's a dog. No, it's not, it's a bloody balloon.
I'd get rid of performance poetry, because if it isn't good enough to write down, shut up.
I think you should cut mime.
Really?
Yep. I can tell you why. Through the power of mime.
That was a very, very crude gesture. Well, that also brings on to the question of science, then, because there was a debate this week about declining the number of students taking GCSE and A-levels in science subjects, preferring instead to do easier options such as media studies and falling. And scientists actually calculate that in 5 years' time, more people will be able to make a science documentary than make science. So can we think of any way we can persuade children to take science more seriously as a subject?
But everything that's bad in the world has come from science, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
I'm not trying to sound like a Luddite, but I think that Loom should be smashed.
Then we lose the noble art of weaving.
I know.
Richard Dawkins has come from science, and is he good?
Wouldn't it be good if Richard Dawkins developed godlike powers? Because he'd really hate himself.
Yes.
If Richard Dawkins developed telekinesis, so I can bring life to matter, I can fly. Bugger!
I once saw Richard Dawkins move a tree, and then he put it back before anyone noticed.
Yes.
I think Richard Dawkins' continuous attempts to debunk the supernatural would be more credible if he didn't drive around in a green van called the Mystery Machine. People going, I would have got away with my religion if it wasn't for you, Richard Dawkins. And your dog, which I notice speaks. Explain that. I'd like to see him do Most Haunted. Yeah. Anyone see that? My wife and I became obsessed with Most Haunted during a difficult period of our marriage. And it's great, there was a guy on it, and he was a man called Derek Okora, who said that all different ghosts were speaking through him. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, all in the Liverpool accent. Well, I think it would be great to have Richard Dawkins present Most Haunted, where he'd have to go in the dark and try and find ghosts. It wouldn't... add up to anything much, but it would be better than 99% of cable television output.
What was the problem?
It's not really something. Basically, she believed in ghosts and I didn't. And this was causing a terrible rift.
So you thought the way to sort it out once and for all was to watch...
as many episodes of Most Haunted as we could.
Did you ever see Least Haunted?
Maybe my
It wasn't very exciting at all. It was just a bloke doing his job.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that I think is needs to be addressed as well by the whole BBC Trust thing.
Yeah.
Is the fact that the television isn't tiny men behind a glass screen acting things out. Likewise, if you're listening to this at home, you must trust the BBC, but we're not inside the little box in your room.
Apart from me, I am.
Boo! And I am quite small.
I tried to get in, but again, these biscuits are hampering my every move.
There's actually been criticism of Mastermind this week because a whole business of sort of declining standards, because someone is actually doing a round. Her specialist subject is the life and career of Jennifer Aniston. And there's... Oh!
Shame. Why not Courtney actually, Cox?
Which is like, ah, is actually the answer to one of the questions.
What is the first syllable of Aniston?
So I thought to resolve it, we ought to have a very difficult mastermind before it gets even easier and they have continuous assessment for one of the rounds. I'd like to choose as a guinea pig you, Justin, to sit much more difficult questions on Jennifer Aniston. Jennifer Aniston is on a 9 o'clock train leaving London for Birmingham, travelling at a constant speed of 60 miles per hour. Why is she on the train and how much press coverage will the journey generate to the nearest column inch?
Friends.
Miss Aniston starred in the 2006 film The Breakup with Vince Vaughn. The film wasn't entirely satisfactory. Why?
Pass.
Jennifer Aniston made a certain hairstyle that later came to be known as the Rachel, famous around the world. Exactly how many women copied that hairstyle and how many women denied they had copied it at dinner parties?
Some.
Statistically speaking, what is Jennifer Aniston most likely to die of? Or now to the general knowledge question, who invented the stun gun? What will happen in the future? I'm looking for everything that will happen and the order in which it will happen. Would the Pentagon function more efficiently if it was an octagon? How long is the world's longest front door key? Explain the chemical reaction that takes place in golfer Tiger Woods' brain when a member of the public addresses him with the words, Easy Tiger. What is Ken Loach's favourite cheese? What's the opposite of placard? Repeat three times quickly the phrase, Harriet Harman's hairy hangman. You've scored 0 points. I've actually got a few more questions here. I'll just throw out to the panel then. What was the first joke ever told and how much time elapsed before it was no longer funny?
The first joke ever was man fall over, second man laugh at man falling over, first man kill second man with stick, laughing end.
What's the least common name in China?
Neil Morrissey.
What will be the opening line of the next Bond film?
It's, these are my otters, Mr. Bond. Look upon them and despair, for they will be the last otters you ever see.
What was the most eventful year in world history?
1997. Mm. Blair came to power, Britpop, JFK was assassinated, men walked on the moon. The Magna Carta. I think I've got that right.
Yes. How many words have more than one meaning and why?
Three words. Well, night can mean a night, dark or a night. Hitch, get married or a problem. And astronaut, no. Wish I hadn't gone for astronaut.
Which former head of the UN ate the most on average for breakfast?
It was Kofi Annan, and every morning he had a coffee followed by a naan.
Years after he left power, Kofi Annan's name continues to be called for celebration.
That was funny as Boutros Ghali.
The UN's been very kind to us.
Okay, we're very nearly at the end of our recording. We've got to be out of here in 4 minutes to make way for 300 children from the Giffnock Primary School production of The Odd Couple. So let's end with a round called The Born Ultiludlum. Following the success of the film version of Robert Ludlum's books, The Bourne Identity, The Bourne Ultimatum, we've noted that all Robert Ludlum books consist of three-word titles. The, followed by a name or normal noun, followed by a second more unusual noun, for example, the Gemini contenders, the Scarlatti inheritance, etc. So, as an experiment, we're going to see if the key to Robert Ludlum's success is this formula for titles by randomly generating our own three-word titles. We've got three boxes. Box one contains lots of pieces of paper with the word the on. Box two contains lots of names, and box three contains lots of unusual nouns. And what we've done is, before the show started, we've asked our audience to write names and normal nouns on bits of paper, and we're going to collect all those in now.
Pass them all to the front.
Pass them to the front. Could you pass the pieces of paper down to the front? Just grabbing a few here. There's a few that we tried ourselves earlier today. I've come up with the Cameron monkey.
The ultimate spinach.
The Tuscan wallet. The neon hymen.
The Branson diarrhea.
The spiral bound fart glass.
The calcium deficiency. Not actually a novel, just a useful guide.
Okay. The Carthusian mimsy.
Should we try a few of these from the audience then? So we'll have the
sugar goose.
It's a prequel to The Wild Geese, isn't it? Okay, let's try another one, see if it works.
The
mobility.
Etoliated. Strange choice of noun there. Not a noun, more of a participle, I think.
The.
Right there.
Golfers.
Shipwreck.
God, it works. Okay, keep going.
The.
Jet set.
Pencil.
I want to keep going until we hit pay dirt.
The.
Byzantium.
Potato. That's an exotic noun for somebody. Sad life.
Okay, well, that's all from us this week. By the way, because we do have to be honest about our jokes, all that stuff earlier about me being bitter because I was in the Oxford Review was all actually made up for comic effect. The truth is, I used my Oxford connections to get a job in BBC Radio and steadily work my way up through the old boy network. Goodbye!
Was Amanda Iannucci's Charm Offensive from the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, presented by Amanda Iannucci. The guests this week were Mark Watson, Justin Edwards and Stuart Lee. It was written by Amanda Iannucci, Will Smith, Roger Drew, Tony Roach, Ian Martin, Nick Doody and Sean Gray. And the producer was David Tyler. The programme was a positive production for the BBC.